in grad school, I heard a really interesting analogy comparing adolescence to a man riding an elephant along a path. And the man symbolizes an adolescent's logic or rational ability. The elephant is their emotion. And our job as educators is to kind of frame the path, you know, that the elephant walks along. Well, if I want my students to take academic risks, I need to be at the head of that charge. So I need to write in front of my students. I need to take academic risks.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations on learning with educators, leaders, change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series with Alex Corbett. So great to have you here, Alex. I would love to know a little bit more about you before I start asking a whole bunch of questions. Tell me a little bit about you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Barbara. I live in Astoria, Queens. I've been living in the New York City area since coming here for college. I love Queens because there's so much good food. I love music, just exploring the city, going to museums, hanging out with friends, and obviously being here with you and talking about education.
Wow. So you've always lived in New York?
No, I grew up actually in a suburb in New Jersey. And then I came out to New York when I attended Fordham University as an undergrad.
Oh, I love Fordham.
That was my introduction to the Bronx. Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I grew up in Maryland and had a lot of friends that went to Fordham. So that's fun.
Good Jesuit education.
I know. It's a great school. Well, I'm so glad you could be here. I met you on Twitter. You're all over Twitter. I was just amazed how every time I put something out and you put it out, you get thousands of hits. It's just wonderful. So when I reached out to you, I said, I have to find out more. So I went in and started checking your website and all of that. And I found out that you work in a middle school.
That's right.
And I worked with middle schools in the San Francisco Bay Area, mostly high poverty at-risk schools. Mm-hmm. So it seems like you do the same. So, mm-hmm. And can you share a little bit about the middle school and, you know, being a middle school English teacher in the Bronx? In fact, you know, I didn't even introduce anything about you. So I'll come back and start telling that a little bit more about you after you, just in case you don't mention it. How's that?
Sure. Yeah, so just a little bit of the context of my work. I work at a small middle school in the Bronx. I always tell people we're right kind of near Yankee Stadium. That's kind of geographically the landmark that a lot of people recognize. I'm coming up on 5 years there. And actually, a little kind of fun fact, I'm in the same classroom that I did my student teaching in. So,
really?
I had a great mentor, and it was around the time that he was transitioning into a leadership role. And so he's like, why don't you just stay here? I was like, that sounds awesome. But like you mentioned, it's a community with a lot of a high needs population. And I work predominantly with Dominican, Puerto Rican, and West African students, and they're incredible. They're the reason they keep me at the school. You'd mentioned at risk, and while our community does have its challenges, for example, you know, we're at the heart of the achievement gap. 99% of our students qualify for free reduced lunch. In the community, there can be tensions between the community and questionable like policing practices. But in the face of those challenges, my school community in the Bronx continues to be super supportive. It definitely feels like a big family. The support and trust that I get from the parents and that kind of shared trust is just an incredible experience. I'm super fortunate and thankful to be there.
Wow. How long have you been there?
I'm coming up on my fifth year.
Wow. There. Did you teach before at a different school?
No, that was my student teaching kind of placement. And I transitioned straight into my job as a seventh grade general ed English teacher. But my co-teacher and I, we have two ICT classes. So we have push-in students with special needs and gen ed students. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I know how tough it is in those schools. So I was reading about you, and you said one of your focuses is on social-emotional learning. And, you know, I really, really believe that is so important, especially when you think of the kids you have.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel that is so important, and what do you do to reach those kids?
That's a great question. When I was in grad school, I heard a really interesting analogy comparing adolescence to a man riding an elephant along a path. And the man symbolizes an adolescent's logic or rational ability. The elephant is their emotion. And our job as educators is to kind of frame the path that that the elephant walks along. And that really spoke a lot to me, because as an educator, before I try to appeal to my students' rational thought, I want to be very mindful of the space that I create, and creating a space of emotional support, really kind of tending to like the elephant, so to speak, metaphorically. So as an educator, I'm always thinking about, am I creating a place that is safe emotionally, that is safe physically, that is safe academically? And I think that the way you do that is not by lecturing kids or telling kids, you know, how things are or what they should do or what you expect, but rather to be a model and to model what you want to see. So, for example, if I want my students to take academic risks, I need to be at the head of that charge, you know, leading that endeavor. So I need to write in front of my students. I need to take academic risks. I need to fall on my face and we can all laugh together. I need feedback from my kids. They'll help me, in the same way that when we turnkey a skill or we go into a project, they might seek me out for support. And so I think I always try and be mindful of jumping into whatever activity I'm asking of my students and being right next to them and beside them.
I love the metaphor, of the elephant. And I love that. And Frame the Path might be the title of this podcast.
Ooh.
Just to let you know, because I really, really liked it. The other is, I'm actually going to be writing about culture and why it's really important to build that culture first in the classroom. So in the beginning of the year that's coming up,
yep,
what do you usually do with your kids when you first meet them? I think this will be really helpful for me and might be sharing what you say, but I think it'll be helpful for any of our listeners.
That's interesting. And, you know, that I've been thinking or I've been outlining and drafting some ideas around culture too. That would be neat to bounce ideas off. One thing that I do is I think it's important to create, sometimes within the confines of a 55-minute period, it's hard to connect with students. So I try and look for times in between classes, you know, to have little conversations, interactions with kids about, you know, what's going on in their lives, what they're interested in. I always want to be open to like share what type of music you're listening to, share, you know, what things are getting you interested in. And that way I understand where they're at, you know, where their interests lie and where they're at culturally. And maybe I can kind of shift my teaching in a way that's resonant. I also straight up tell them in the beginning of the year, I've got your back, you know, and I'm not perfect. And I'll have my days where I struggle and, you know, maybe I have bad days just like everybody else, but I became a teacher because I get a big kick out of kids. I love laughing. And I'm here to support you guys. So, you know, I know you don't know me that well yet. I'm on the first day of school and I don't know you very well, but I'm just going to put myself out there a little bit and say, you know, I've got your back and this is going to be a good ride.
That's so cool. What grades do you teach? I
forget. Seventh grade. So mostly like 12 and 13 year olds. And, you know, I tell people that I teach seventh grade and people go, oh, I've heard people call middle school like a, maybe this is, I wouldn't use this in a school setting, but like whiskey. Like at first the taste is really like, ugh, but you, over time you grow a taste for it. And I've really, and I've really learned, I always used to think that I would teach 11th grade, and, you know, I'd sit in a chair and wear glasses two sizes too big for my face. And I'd talk about, you know, literature and lecture. But when I came into the seventh grade setting, the kids were just so genuine and silly and honest. And they really challenged me to be vulnerable and just real and have fun with it. And so it's been fun.
See, I love middle school. That's the grades I worked with. And I felt that they really, you can really connect to them if you do it right in the beginning of the year.
Right.
And also, they're really vulnerable at that age.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you either get them hooked to want to learn more or you lose them. So to me, it's fun to hear what you're doing in the class and how you're really working with them in the beginning like this, because music is really big too for them.
Yeah. Music, television, art. Yeah. You name it. And I, you know, just bouncing off of what you said, if I feel, like you said, like myself, like losing a kid, I do my best to take responsibility for that. You know, what am I not doing to connect with that child? And at the moment where I feel like I'm losing a student, so to speak, or I'm not engaging them, that's when I need to connect most, with a student, maybe go down to gym and play basketball with, you know, him, or just talk to somebody, you know, outside in the hallway, just to learn more and figure out how I can shift, you know?
It really is all about relationships. It's that relationship building in the beginning of the year that really matters. So if you don't connect, right, you have to figure out a way to connect with them and let them know that you care about them. Because I think that's what happens with many of the kids that you're working with. They may not have that at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And kids have a lot of capacity to reciprocate and show a lot of compassion back. You know, I might have a bad day and a kid might say, Mr. Corbin, what's wrong? You know, I'm like, you know, like, so it's not always a top down model. You know, you can get into a space where it begins to really feel like a family.
Oh, I love it, because that's what they need. So many, what I remember with the kids, it's been some time since I've been in the classroom, but I'm coaching now and working in schools and working, helping teachers do some of this strategies of building the culture and building the relationships. But it also comes from the administration.
Yes.
So do you feel like you have all the support you need?
It's so interesting that you mentioned that, because when I talk about my school setting and how I run my classroom, a lot of, especially, you know, experienced educators and coaches can immediately sense, oh, you have a good administration, because I do. And, you know, my principal is very open-minded, very compassionate, very progressive, and she empowers us to, you know, go with our gut and put the kids first, you know. And like I mentioned in the beginning, you know, we are in a place where, you know, our school is resting right smack dab in the middle of the achievement gap. You know, our test scores are tough. And there is the temptation, especially for administrators, to just jump straight into test prep and squash all love of learning. And my principal, Serifa, has the deep courage to not do that, even though that her instincts might push her just to order the books and hand them out to teachers, you know?
I feel that if the schools that I've talked to that put the energy into building the relationships, changing the culture, find eventual increases in the test scores because the kids care. Everybody's caring and the parents mm-hmm. feel like everybody is listening to their child. So I think it's so important. Now, I'm going to go in a different direction now.
Sure, sure.
I could go on and on about this.
A great discussion now. It's like yeah. we're...
I know I could go... We'll have to come back. We'll have to have you come back another time and talk more about it when we both write our things on culture.
There you go.
You know, I'm an ed technologist. I was, anyway, for years.
Right.
And you mentioned that and gamification. So because you talked about music and others, how do you integrate technology and gamification in your classroom?
So our school is not a one-to-one school, so not all of my students have laptops or tablets or things like that. So sometimes actually, you know, I try to use a lot of technology, but sometimes it's more on my end. And but one thing that I've learned is gamification can take many different forms, right? So the idea of gamification is that any learning experience can reflect video game design. And so in video games, you can choose your own character, you gain experience points, you level up, you earn badges. And so we try and bring those principles into our pedagogy. So I can give you two examples. First, I facilitate projects that require my kids to pick roles and to role play. So we do like a talk show project where you have so many different jobs. There's the hosts, the guests, the writers, musical guests, commercials, and each role, you know, my students have available to them and they can kind of dictate the way they're critically engaging in the project. So just to zoom out a little bit, the purpose of the project is all the guests on the talk show, quote unquote, are acting as characters from the texts and the books that we read. And so they need to go back, have such a deep, intimate understanding of their specific character so that when the writers and the hosts interview them, they can embody that character and speak with authority. And it's a lot of fun and it doesn't feel like school. It feels like we're just kind of having a blast. We're laughing. We're thinking deeply. There are like multiple kids doing work at the same time, whether up front or behind the scenes. You know, sometimes a kid will grab the camera and he'll do some camera work. So that's one way that I add like character roles into my teaching. Another form of gamification is when I launch argumentative writing. So when I first started teaching, my instruction was very dry. And I was like, you know, a good argument needs to have a claim and you back it up with reasons and you have to cite textual evidence and you have to have a warrant or like some sort of rule or logic that connects back to your evidence, back to your claim. And that's great. But then when I added an element of gamification, it really just kind of skyrocketed the whole intellectual endeavor, so to speak. So the way I frame it now is I put my students in the context of being a crime scene detective because all good detectives need to be able to argue very well. So I didn't come up with this idea by myself. George Hillocks actually wrote a book on argument, and he suggests that you take like these picture or comic book mysteries that can be solved using argumentative thinking. And then I took that and we look at mystery comics, mystery graphics, and then we ramp it up and then we're reading like mini stories and different mysteries and that are open-ended. And then I then have my students work in groups or independently trying to use argumentative writing. So my students are making a claim about who they think is, for example, the murderer. They're giving reasons. They're citing textual evidence. And then they're warranting their thinking, saying, okay, this is how my evidence connects back to who I think did it. And so they're still practicing argument. If they had to go and then write, you know, a 5-paragraph essay, they could, but they got to do it in a way that, you know, we ham it up and we set the scene in a way that's a lot more fun and, you know, quote unquote gamified. So,
wow.
Sorry, that was a long-winded. I didn't mean to be so long-winded.
No, I love it. It actually, you bring in some of the things from the other questions I was going to ask, but I saw that you created and produced the new Teacher on the Street segment for NCTE's Voices from the Middle podcast. After telling me about all the other things you did, I realized there's that, and then there's these time travel interviews. All these things that you're doing, it looks like you're looking at ways to really bring in empathy, bring in inquiry, and ways to really engage them in the learning process. I just don't want to miss anything because I didn't know about these others.
Yeah. So one thing that gets me very inspired is being part of larger professional communities and learning from other teachers. And I learn a ton from my peers, you know, on my grade team and in my school. But in addition to that, it's so cool to learn things from folks on Twitter. Or recently this summer, I had the opportunity to go down to Houston, Texas, for Apple's ADE Academy 2017. And I met so many folks who are doing incredible things in their classroom. So I guess that kind of ties into the segment that I help produce for NCTE's Voices from the Middle. What I try and do is I try and interview different teachers and kind of pick their brains about a specific topic for each episode. And, you know, I definitely do it for the listeners of the podcast, but I also do it for myself. I learn so much every time I kind of create an episode. And I encourage actually you guys to check out. There's a third installment coming out in the next few weeks where I sit down and I talk to my students and I get feedback from them. And that was such a cool experiment and I learned so much. So that episode's going to come out in the next few weeks.
Oh, I want to hear that one. I'm sitting here listening to you, and Alex, I just don't know how you do everything. You teach full time. You do these wonderful segments, and you said you're an ADE now. Are you an ADE?
You have to attend the academy, and I just finished. So I think at this point I can hopefully safely say, yes, I'm an ADE.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank
it's you. A wonderful group. That to me is like that. And along with all that you share on Twitter, I'm constantly learning from you. So I went to your site and I found these, the Litcraft bundles of teacher materials. You made those?
Yes, I did. Well, no, I can't take all the credit. I worked very, very closely with an artist named Ryan Zales. We actually grew up in New Jersey together, and he did all of the design and the artwork. I created like a rough draft template that I actually for years used in my class, and then he kind of ran with it and made it incredible.
Oh, they're amazing.
I can explain it a little bit if that helps.
Okay, please.
So I am under no illusion that like a mini lesson or a teacher directed instruction is always the best way to get kids to become better readers. Sometimes you just need to get a kid hooked with an independent reading book or inspire them to read a series, and then they're off and they're learning and they're improving and exploring, you know, new worlds and stuff like that. So I place a lot of value in independent reading time. My first couple of years, I had a lot of trouble inspiring kids to read independently. So I created a system that I now call Litcraft. And basically the way it worked is I set different benchmarks on a poster, which kind of goes back to this idea of gamification and leveling up. So if all my kids start on the first level in September, which is like reading apprentice. And then after they read more books and hit maybe two or three books read, they level up to, quote, reading knight. And then they go up to reading ninja, master, titan. And as they keep leveling up, they're reading more books. And then I created bookmarks that go with it. So as my kids walk around the school with their colored bookmarks sticking out of their books, you know, there's a sense of pride in what level they've read up to, you know? And so it gamified reading. Kids are becoming better readers. They're achieving new levels in Litcraft, getting new bookmarks, gaining new responsibilities and abilities in the classroom as well. And they loved it. They were hooked. They're proud of their reading. They love to show off their bookmarks. So my next step was, how do I share this with other people? And at first I was sending people, I would send people my PDFs of the materials I made personally, but eventually I was like, I need to roll this out in a bigger capacity. And so I worked with an artist and we created the materials and now they're available. So wow. I'm excited about that.
Well, definitely going to share the links and put up some pictures and stuff like that about it, because it's, you know, I really didn't know that about you until I started doing some searching. So we got to let people know. And what do you have planned? Like anything new coming up this next school year?
So I'll be super honest with you. I have absolutely no idea. I have a lot of ideas swimming in my head right now, especially, like I said, after coming back from the ADE Academy in Texas. I met so many people who are doing so many incredible things. I'm kind of at this point now where I'm like, where do I start? So I'm going to use August. I consider August to be my Sunday night of the year. You know, if June is Friday, July is Saturday, August is my Sunday, and I'm a big procrastinator. So I'm going to be planning all Sunday in August, trying to figure out how to integrate more technology meaningfully in my classroom. So.
Oh, you're amazing. So when does school start for you?
We start late. It's September 7th because we actually ended June 28th.
Oh.
So we end late and then we start late in New York.
So you have a whole Sunday to work.
I have a whole Sunday, if you can believe it.
Oh, Alex, this has been amazing. I've learned so much about you, and I hope we continue our conversation. So I have to thank you. This was really delightful today.
You know what? I had a blast talking with you, and I all the tangents we went on were just as exciting as the structured questions that we had. So thank you so much for having me. And let me just take a moment to say, you're awesome. You do so many great things. I was checking out your website before we kind of organized this and I was blown away. I was like, man, I need to pick up my game here. Barbara's killing it. Thank you so much.
What I find is, and thank you very much for saying that, but not being in the classroom, I just don't even know how you do it. And this is why I was so, so honored that you would come on this podcast show with me and share, because you're doing it because you're passionate about the kids and helping them. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Hopefully we can collaborate more in the future.
Oh, we definitely will. So thank you so much.
Thanks again for having me, Barbara.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast series with Alex Corbett. Visit us at barbarabray.net to learn more about Alex's projects and how he frames the path for his students. Please subscribe if you want to join the conversations.